The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, so like, why are you all going down?
Yeah.
This is kind of silly.
Right.
So we're in this room and there now. That's how it worked out. And I decided I don't want to sit behind a table.
Wow, aren't you hip?
Yeah, am I?
I don't know.
I'm still losing hair.
A conversation with Josh Sun.
Yeah, that would be that time.
Okay. I'll do that soon.
So,
hello, guys.
Hi, I'm Josh Sarnoff.
And I'm Vicki Phillips.
And we both teach in the IP clinic. Vicki teaches communications law. I teach patent law in addition. And we are the face for today of the IP program here.
And communication.
And communications program, right?
We like to think of it as sort of a spectrum of related laws and issues. And, you know, the
good IP work, spectrum, communications.
Spectrum hit.
Yeah. That was good.
Okay. All right. We'll start throwing out patent terms. Just watch it.
So you guys all have a copy of the course list. And, you know, we're happy to mostly answer your questions. I've got a couple of things to say, and I'm sure Vicki does as well. The main thing, come on down, grab, if you don't have it already, copy the, that's the brochure for the program and the list of classes. You'll notice from...
trying to pull together a list of, you know, sort of all IP courses, related courses, relevant courses, just to give you guys an idea, since the course catalog is sort of a mishmash.
So are all of you first years? Mm-hmm. Are any of you part-time? A few of you, okay. And the part-time people then are not in the introduction to IP law, of course, because you can't be. Any of you others in the intro? A few of you. Okay, and some of you are not. Good. So one of the things that we try to emphasize, you'll see foundation courses, is we really think that the foundation courses are important. And in particular, we really think that you should take at least one of the patent law, trademark law, or copyright law classes, because it will give you a relatively thorough exposure to basic concepts in the intellectual property area. And, you know, all the other courses are terrific and follow your interest, take as many as you want. If you really think this is a field you want to practice in, we encourage you to take all of the foundation courses, not necessarily the intro, but the patent law, trademark, and copyright law, just so that you're well versed in it. But the basic idea is take a foundation course and take as many others as you would like and have time for and are interested in. The other thing that I'll say, and perhaps I'm best qualified to say it since I teach patent law, is there's a continuous fear that if you don't have a technical background, you shouldn't, can't, aren't interested in taking patent law. It's a wrong perception in any number of ways, but the most important thing to say is you cannot be a competent IP professional these days without understanding something about patent law. Therefore, if this is a field you're interested in, you owe it to yourself to at least become familiar enough with when your client walks in the door and they've got a patent problem and what to do about it, if it's only sending them out to the next door down the hall. But you don't need to have a technical background. It's a mistake to think that you do. Many law firms, particularly DC and very sophisticated law firms, might only hire people with technical backgrounds to be patent prosecutors. But most patent lawyers are not patent prosecutors, and no patent lawyer other than a patent prosecution is a fancy name for application lawyer, right? None of them are required to have a technical background. In order to litigate, in order to do deals, in order to do licensing, in order to do any number of other things, do you need a technical background? No. And the idea that, therefore, because you don't have a science or a technical background, you shouldn't take patent law is just a huge misconception. So, enough said about that. Take the foundation courses, take as many of the other courses you want, and then I'm happy to answer questions. I'm sure Vicki wants to add some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I will address just sort of the communications curriculum since Josh sort of did the IP. I mean, this is there among sort of supplementary and relevant courses, of course, to our IP curriculum, but and I practiced communications law for many years, so it's a topic near and dear to my heart, and in an era where all this stuff is converging, as you guys know, from, you know, sort of the Blackberries or whatever that you hold, the television service you get from who knows where, it's a really changing, developing area, and IP, whether it's patent, whether it's trademark, whether it's copyright, is increasingly copy protection. The Napster battles have moved to video, all a piece of it. Communications law is the course that I teach. It's a survey course. It sort of looks at this theory of converging technologies, the FCC regulation, the legislative regulation, and it's really sort of a general survey of all the areas, telephone, cable, media, internet, and looks at it from learning from the lessons of all these past services that used to be regulated in silos. But now a new FCC, and especially a new Obama administration, is really looking at regulating them with cross-cutting thinking and policy approaches. So it's really an interesting time. So that's sort of the survey course. Then there's a media law course. There's a telecom law course that sort of separates them. There's an international telecom law course. And sort of foundational course for all those would be administrative law, I think. I would say other very useful courses for going out and practicing both in IP and in communications and related areas, media law, would be First Amendment, would be a very important course to have. It's sort of, you know, the corollary of IP rights is sort of also our right under the First Amendment to speak and use things. Antitrust would probably be a really important course. Corporations, all of our IP courses, e-commerce, cyberspace, privacy law, legislative, both in IP and communications, any legislative process course, especially being here in D.C., is pretty important. And I guess in both areas, just to talk about things other than the coursework, are obviously the IP clinic that we teach in is something where these things come into an experiential setting, but also externships, lots of externships in both these areas, communications area, IP area. In the communications area, there's tons of possibilities at the FCC, on the Hill, at public interest organizations, and there are lots of law clerk positions at places like National Public Radio, trade associations that our students have been placed in, similar internships at the Patent and Trademark Office, the Copyright Office. So I would say consider these experiential opportunities as you think about your curriculum in the next 2 years. Also, student groups, the IP Society, very active, very, very growing and big, and maybe some of you guys have already joined. There's a Communications Law Society, there's a Media Law Society, Law and Government Society is obviously relevant to both these areas. And then the publications, just the SBA just approved a couple nights ago an IP brief. So there will be some writing, journal type of writing opportunities in the IP area now. And then I would say also consider sort of outside bar association student memberships as you move through your next couple of years, because especially in the communications area, there's a very tight bar association, Federal Communications Bar Association, with a very active student group and a very active young lawyers group. Same with the Federal Circuit Bar Association. I mean, these are, you know, in this tough job market, crazy times, it's really these networking opportunities are the, with the outside bar associations, it's never too early to start, you know, doing things with practicing lawyers, and these are the places that you can get to know them as peers, not, you know, not people lecturing to you as adjuncts. You do different activities with them, volunteering opportunities, things like that. So I would just say to think about that as you figure out your time management in the next couple of years, because, you know, those are valuable connections you can make. So
let me just reiterate three things that Vicki said. The first is that there are some courses that are either on or off this list that really are critically important to anything you do as a lawyer, but certainly to IP and to communications. And ad law, which Vicki mentioned, is really an important one. Antitrust law is on the list. It's another important one. Con law is not on the list, but you're required, so you get it, right? The second is that the opportunities here are really extensive. I mean, you can also become a research assistant for professors, but you can do a lot more on your own, too. So you should really, I mean, and you're in Washington. This is what you're paying all this huge amount of money for, to be at this school, and you can take advantage of the opportunities in ways that students around the country are jealous of, so you should. And the last is that there are a number of associations, as Vicki had mentioned, that routinely have not just networking events, but really valuable educational events. Vicki mentioned the Federal Circuit Bar Association as one. AIPLA is another. There are lots of others that I don't want to belabor. Again, the premise is your engagement to involve them may come back to you in all sorts of unforeseen and beneficial ways. So, what questions do you guys have?
For students who are trying to integrate an IP law and maybe a business law, what type of courses would y'all suggest, especially like if you want to get into like investment law in particular? I noticed the patent acquisition and exploitation class seems like a very interesting one to do.
When you say investment, what are you thinking of?
I'm thinking of like venture capital contracts for investing in companies with IP and patent, well, especially patent.
So there are a couple of things. Again, take any of the foundational courses, because there's a lot of venture capital that goes into trademark acquisition and copyright as well. Doesn't really matter, but get at least one of the foundation courses. Beyond that, there are questions about whether your interest is in international investment, in which case some of our international trade courses would be really valuable. Patty Day Ali does a terrific basic international trade law course. I think it's the one that was listed here. And then there's the investment, trade, and human rights seminar, trade and development. So again, if it's an international investment issues as opposed to simply venture capital and business formation, we don't have a huge business intellectual property based business formation curriculum. The e-commerce law and drafting course, which I think Walter Efros teaches, is a good one. IP management to some extent. The patent acquisition and exploitation is valuable, but it's again very specialized. So my most fundamental recommendation is, if that's where you think you're headed, try to start broadly, and then at the end of your career here, focus on the more detailed and particular classes. Get a broad base and then focus. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Josh, by the way. And your name is?
Oh, John.
John, thanks. And you are?
I'm Mark.
Mark.
Eventually, I'd like to at least try my hand at clinic and more than IP clinic. Is there any classes specifically that you like to see, you know, the students coming into clinic, you know, having taken or at least a basic knowledge of, to come in and really make the most of it?
The answer is no. However,
You've heard this answer before.
Right. So we have no prerequisites for the IP clinic. And we have in the past, and this year will as well, take rising first years into the clinic who, by definition, have had at best one opportunity for something IP related, and many of them didn't get into it, right? So the first thing is, you know, like most things that you're going to be obsessed about for the next 3 years or the rest of your life, stop worrying, right? The second thing is that said, we do take into consideration why is this person interested in the clinic and how strong is their interest, because we'd like to try to satisfy the interest of people who really want to do it. That's about as much as I have to say.
Well, I think it's back to the other advice of the I think the foundation courses, either patent, trademark, or copyright, would be
have the opportunity and you want to take an IP course, what IP course should you take? One of those three, start there. Mm-hmm.
Justin. Mm-hmm. Sorry. You can design pretty much 2 full-year curriculum with mm-hmm. strictly IP courses, which is obviously not realistic. I mean, given the likelihood that we're only going to be able to take like one or two, like what would be the best guidelines, other than the foundational course, obviously, but like of all the other courses you list here, and there's a ton that are interesting. So
that's a tough
one. Is it just sort of like you have an eye towards ultimate specialization, or is there something, should you pick something that you're just interested in that you want exposure to, or, you know, what's the best...
So here is my suggestion. Take as many of the foundation courses first. Mm-hmm. If you still have time in your schedule after you've had all three of them, which is not easy, right? Then I would consider additional ones, but not to the expense of taking really important classes like con law, which you already have, ad law, and antitrust, or... you know, some other course that you think is going to be really valuable to you. Then you have the question, how much value is an additional IP course that's highly specialized compared to another course that you really have an interest in, you won't have a chance to see in the rest of your life, etc. There's no good way to answer that question. It's really what your interest is. Right? You're not going to be deprived if you go out into practice not having had the specialized course. At the same time, you may really want to take it because it's going to be of interest to you. Yeah, and you're?
Demi. I was wondering, I had a friend who went to some networking event where she talked to an IP lawyer who said that in the Washington, D.C. area, it tends to be more like patent lawyers, and even a lot of the patent lawyers, if there are some copyright or trademark issues, then the patent lawyers might actually cover those issues too. So I was wondering, geographically in this area, is there like opportunity for people who want to go into copyright or trademark law?
Yes. I'll elaborate in a second. Do you want
to? Yeah, I mean, and I think it's true that there are patent firms and patent attorneys that those firms do trademark. I don't know if they do as much copyright, but they do trademark that comes in the door with the patent. But the larger firms, there's definitely separate sections. And we have had a lot of graduates. I mean, Josh and I have been here 8 years, and lots of students totally in that boat. They're also the people that come totally technically, with a technical background, that wouldn't do anything but patent. Right, and then there's the people who like art history majors that they really want to do patent, and they're sort of between a rock and a hard place. But we have sent a lot of alums out doing copyright, trademark, and like Josh mentioned before, patent litigation type practices that don't require the technical. So I think it's true that a well-rounded IP lawyer now should know all three, but I think economies of scale in a law firm and specialization that tends to happen in a law firm, especially as you rise through the process, people sort of focus on one of the three areas.
The other thing is it reinforces this distinction between patent application lawyers and other kinds of patent lawyers. So Washington, obviously, it's technically not Washington anymore, it's Arlington. Actually, or Alexandria, excuse me, is where the PTO is and where you apply. But it's also where you apply for trademarks. And therefore, Washington tends to attract a high level of lawyers who do both patents and or trademarks. At the same time, Washington is also the place where the copyright office is. So you also get a large number of firms who do copyright. It's also the place where the Congress is. So wherever you have legislative action about these things, you're going to get more lawyers. So the idea that this is totally, this Washington job market is totally dominated by patent lawyers is just wrong. Right? There are a lot more patent lawyers here than in other parts of the country, precisely because of PTO, but there are also more copyright lawyers here. The only two other areas where there are probably more copyright lawyers is New York and LA, right? And for very specific reasons about the legal culture, I don't know that there's another area where there are more trademark lawyers, quite frankly. So there's just a lot of opportunity here, and at the same time, precisely because there's a lot of opportunity, given the clients, given the government relations outputs, there's also a lot of competition for those jobs. The other thing to be said, though, is that litigation occurs everywhere. So for litigation, you know, you don't have to be in Washington and you're going to get patent, trademark, and copyright. The only thing one can say is there has been increasing amounts. Patent litigation has been accelerating. The others have been staying less. And the dollar awards in patent litigation keep going up. So there has been an increase in patent litigation hiring. Over the past 10 years, it's dramatic. And that means that there have been more opportunities for people to go in. But, you know, almost every person who litigates patents is also litigating trade secrets, mm-hmm. right? So the idea that, again, you know, you're in a legal market that has no alternatives but patent prosecution, and you don't have a science background, so you can't get a job in IP, just put it out of your mind. Right. Doesn't mean it's a good job market. That's a separate issue. Right. That's the economy. Other questions? Yeah. And you are?
I'm Daniel. Mm-hmm. I went to the network thing and I talked to one of the person who came from one of the patent firms. Uh-huh. And if you their patent prosecution lawyers, about over 90% of them have advanced degrees, especially when it comes to biology or research.
Yep.
And I was wondering if that's really a requirement, if you want to do something bio-related for IP prosecution.
Okay, so let's start again with the premise. They're patent prosecutors for a select firm or often have advanced degrees. Or mostly have advanced degrees, and they probably aren't going to look at people who have a bachelor's in science, much less a BA, to become patent prosecutors. That's true, but if you go to other parts of the country, it may not be true. If you go to small firms where people are inventing stuff and can't afford to pay $500 an hour for a lawyer, it's not going to be true. So it really depends on the kind of practice that you want to engage in. If you want to be a biotech patent prosecutor at a large firm representing very sophisticated clients, you're going to need an advanced degree. If you want to do something else with patent law, no. Right. Other questions?
I was just... Yeah. Interested, you both could explain like just your legal backgrounds and how you kind of came into, you know, handling communications law and doing patent law, like where you sort of, you know, rose mm-hmm. up from and how you came here.
Sure. I walk. Actually, I take my bike. I take it back. That's true. You want to go first?
Yeah, I sort of started out in a big general practice firm as a summer associate, and, you know, the nature of those projects, you sort of gravitate towards things that you sort of like, and I really liked IP and I really liked communication. So I ended up, after clerking for a year, going back to a firm here in town that specializes in communications law, but also had an IP practice. So I tried to straddle two floors and be a generalist, which is even back then was increasingly hard as you go up, because you were sort of told to sell your soul to one client. And so I left the firm to go take a job to be an assistant general counsel at the Humanities Endowment, because I was also really interested in arts law and cultural law. So, you know, try to retain that generalist feel. And, you know, it's just sort of classic happenstance of opportunities coming your way. Washington really is a small town, and when you get into a certain bar, whether it's patent or communications, arts and cultural law for sure, you just get, you know, a smaller and smaller base of folks, and opportunities come your way. So an opportunity came my way to go to the Federal Communications Commission under the then General Counsel Bill Kennard, who then became chairman. And then that was sort of happenstance that, you know, the job sort of come to you because of where your benefactors go. And then I came happenstance here. Peter Yazzie started this IP clinic. And I sort of found my way with Josh here to sort of create and start this interesting new clinical offering that at the time was really new, and except for our sister clinic at Berkeley that was started the same year, there were very, very few, no clinics that did policy work, a couple that did sort of more prosecution-oriented IP work. And, you know, after 8 years, we look around and we have more than 20.
30.
More than 20 and different sort of formulations of them. Some of them are centers, some of them are actual live client clinics, and, you know, several that are doing policy work. So we now sort of have a movement. So that's sort of how I meandered here.
I never took an IP course in law school. I was not sure I even wanted to finish law school at one point, but I ended up finishing it, having an interest in environmental law principally. Worked for the EPA in their general counsel's office for 3 years. Went out and became an environmental lawyer for roughly 15 years. I ended up teaching for a couple of those. But how did I become a patent lawyer was I had been doing, originally was going to do some environmental work. The guy who I went to work with left the firm, not formally, but to start their Brussels office. His main client went somewhere else, so there wasn't enough work to keep me busy. So I then started doing insurance practice and food and drug work. The firm had a very sophisticated food and drug practice and started to recognize the need for patent lawyers. They said, who has a technical background, who wants to learn how to be a patent lawyer and a patent prosecutor? I said, I've got nothing better to do, and they were paying for it. So I did. It turns out I was just fascinated by it, and then eventually did more and more of it over time, and when this opportunity came to teach, I jumped at it for the reasons that Vicky said. But you can see that it was totally random. I mean, it had nothing to do with any conscious plan. I didn't take any courses, and, you know, I'm probably the worst for not having had as good a background in IP as I would have if I had taken courses that gave me some idea of the concepts. The only thing I can say is at least I had a good administrative law background. And I had, you know, at that point, 10 to 15 years of legal practice to learn what was important, and particularly how law is made and how to advocate and things like that. Those are the things that you hopefully will learn in some of your other classes, but you certainly will learn if you take clinic. So, right. And by the way, we recommend you take a clinic regardless of what clinic it is. We like the IP clinic. We think it's the best, but so what? You know, take a clinic. It will do you good. Other questions?
Is any volunteer?
I'm sorry, you are.
Oh, Matilda.
Thank you.
Is there any volunteer work to get involved with helping at the clinic or something?
There is all sorts of ways to volunteer, and you can even volunteer for money, right? Yeah. It's called becoming a Dean's Fellow. So, anyone who would like to become a Dean's Fellow, send an email to me or Vicky.
Yeah.
Jay Sarnoff at WCL, VF Phillips. Phillips, plural, right?
Yep.
At WCL.
And, we will at some point be putting a notice in the docket, but we welcome them anytime. And we basically hire Dean's Fellows for the summer and for the full academic year, too.
So if, like, you're going doing study abroad and you can only start later this summer?
Yeah, we've had that, too. People in the Chile program, the Turkey program, we've had you all.
We've accommodated. Right, yeah, we've dealt with everything.
We sort of figure out a summer hourly mix that works. And especially, you know, as Rising 2Ls, the year-long clinic dean's fellow is a lot of people do the summer and continue into the year. So, if you're interested, please, or you could drop your stuff off in the room 417, the clinic room.
I'm not sure if
you are.
I'm Andrew.
I'm just kidding.
I was wondering, for any advanced level added courses, if there's any prerequisite, if there's an order to take sort of IP classes.
Okay, so let me just reiterate.
No.
I don't remember it, though. So
not thoroughly enough.
All right. So if somebody will send this back, we recommend that you take the foundation courses.
That's the color version.
And take at least one of them. Patent, copyright, or trademark. And then, as opposed to taking other courses, we recommend taking other foundation courses first, just because we think that it will broaden your understanding, reinforce concepts, and give you a basic grounding in the most important, not the only by any means, areas of law that you're likely to encounter if you go out and be an IP lawyer. That said, people have interests, so do follow your interests, but our encouragement is start with at least one of the foundation courses and take as many of them in preference to other courses, but not exclusively. And the other thing we said is there are some outside courses that really are important, one of which is not even on the list, and that's administrative law, right? Which you should take to be any kind of a competent lawyer in this society.
And it really should be on this list.
It should be, but it's not, because it's not. It's so basic to everything, right? It should be required first year course is what it should be. Yeah. And you are?
Nathan.
Uh-huh.
With the fundamental courses, is there any specific schedule, like are some only offered fall?
So trademark and copyright are usually offered in the fall, and patent is usually offered in the spring because that's the way we've done it. I'm guessing that's the way we'll do it.
Are any of them offered in the evening programs?
Well, yes, and copyright, I think in particular, is offered, if not in the evening, certainly at a bridge hour. And this year makes it a little hard on me because I get tired. I ended up teaching patent law now from 6 to 8:40 on Monday nights precisely to be able to offer it more readily to our part-time students. I had been teaching it during bridge hour, 4:30 to 6, Tuesdays and Thursday, which is, I have to say, easier on you guys and easier on me, but there was a demand to do it later. So.
I think one of those two courses is normally offered at night each year. I don't think trademark.
I don't think has been offered at night.
And that's right. In the fall.
But that's in the fall, right?
And the Introduction to Intellectual Property Policy and Law, that's not the 1L course, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the 1L course?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It is.
There used to be another course.
There used to be, but it's not offered except for L alums now.
Yeah, I actually have a question about that. Does that overlap with the other foundation courses, or would you recommend taking the other foundation courses?
I would recommend taking at least one and maybe more of the other foundation courses, even if you have taken that. Yes. Right. Right. And the amount of overlap is relatively minimal for two reasons. First is you can only do so much in a very broad survey with any area of law. And the second is that you're really not trying to understand the legal doctrine and underlying principles at the same level of complexity and at the same, or at that level of detail. It's really just to give you kind of an overall feel for things. So two good reasons, even if you're taking it to take all three of the other ones. Other questions?
Thank you guys for coming.
Yeah.
And
feel free to call, write, send smoke signals, stop by.